Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Generation Y ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible. Starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
There are days like today where I am just too busy to get outside and go feed myself. And that's where DoorDash comes in. It's super convenient and they bring the food to me. Also, I don't like paying delivery fees. So I have DashPass. DashPass is an exclusive membership from DoorDash that gets you unlimited $0 delivery fees on eligible orders and members-only deals and discounts, all for only $9.99 a month. DashPass actually pays for itself in two orders on average. DashPass makes it easy to save at restaurants, grocery stores, and all your local favorites. Open the door to $0 delivery fees and savings you can't get anywhere else. Sign up for DashPass today only on DoorDash and get your first 30 days free if you're a new member. Subject to change, terms apply.
Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app to listen ad-free.
From Wondery. How you doing tonight, Aaron?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good tonight, Justin. How are you doing?
I've had better years, but I'm still kicking like the rest of us, so we're doing all right.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
There was an interesting update about the Delphi murders, and I know that you follow this case way closer than I do. Just so many other things that I follow and look at that this is the one case that everyone else is hyped about and I'm not following, but this, they made an arrest, an Indiana man. He was arrested for kidnapping, beating, and sexually assaulting a 9-year-old girl. And I will say, Aaron, when you look at his face, I wouldn't convict this guy on just his likeness alone, but he does look like the sketch. He does look like the man in the video, but the video is pretty sketchy and the sketch, well, it's pretty general.
Actually, I have a couple of things to add here. One, I haven't really read up on this. Maybe it's because I've read as much as there is and there isn't a lot yet. So all we can say is hopefully this leads to some more information or solving this case. That would be great. But I also noticed that Kelsey German, Liberty's sister, has been talking about this, and she's saying that she can't get too worked up because there are so many suspects. I mean, all you have to do is look around the internet, and there are many, many suspects, many of which sort of seem to fit. And that's because we just don't know enough. So when it comes down to it, I understand why Kelsey's not so excited about this. And for the rest of us, we just have to wait and see and hope that the law enforcement investigating this case really are getting closer, even if Chadwell isn't the guy. Because at this point, we know he's committed this one crime that he's in the news about. But again, the story is maybe, just maybe, he could be tied to the Delphi murders case.
Crime Con, Austin, Texas, June 4th through 6th at the Fairmont. Use our code GenY21?
Absolutely. I can't stress this enough, but CrimeCon is one of the best events you'll ever attend. So if you don't have tickets yet, use our code.
And if you're in London or anywhere thereabouts. We're going to be at CrimeCon UK. Same code.
Gen Y21. That's in September 25th and 26th.
Perfect. Now, Aaron, tonight's case was, I guess, one that I had suggested years ago. And we're just now getting around to it. Not a big deal. And it happens to be a local case for us. And it surrounds a mysterious death. And it involves a religious organization, which, off chance, my niece and sister-in-law actually went to this church a few times. So a little bit of a personal connection there. And I want to stress that this episode, there's no commentary on religion, religious beliefs, or we're not trying to say anything even about this church, because this was more or less what I perceive as a small group at this church of people, individuals who are all involved with this situation. And this has nothing to do with the church as an organization or what they stand for. So with that, what are we talking about tonight, Aaron?
Tonight, we're talking about the mysterious death of a woman named Bethany Deaton in October of 2012. She was just 27 years old and had been married at that time for about 2 months.
What do we know about how she was found, where she died?
So here are the details. Detective Penny Cole, who was with the Jackson County Sheriff's Office, responded to a call. Park Rangers had notified them about a tan Ford Windstar minivan that was at Longview Lake, and a woman's body was inside of it. So Cole arrived and found the woman sitting on the passenger's side third seat with a leg curled under the other, and her head was against the window. There was a white plastic bag over her head, tied under her chin, and there were a couple of 100-count bottles of Equate acetaminophen PM. This was, you know, over-the-counter generic version of Tylenol PM, which was on the seat near her. So one of the bottles was unopened. The other was empty.
They also found what appears to be a suicide note, right?
Yes. It read, "My name is Bethany Deaton. I chose this evil thing. I did it because I wouldn't be a real person. And what is the point of living if it is too late for that? I wish I had chosen differently a long time ago. I knew it all and refused to listen. Maybe Jesus will save me." Her photo ID from work was found on the floor.
Yeah. I mean, you got a suicide note, an ID, bottles, and a bag over her head. This is pretty obvious that she wanted to take her own life. And it's wrapped up nicely with a bow, right? I mean, I would look at this and assume suicide. But others might look at this and think, that's a little too perfect. Like, her ID is there, her note's there. Who's this organized? But that's for other people to decide.
And one of the things that we'll be discussing is Bethany was a nurse. So some question, why would she use over-the-counter pain pills to take her life if she was a nurse? She would have had access to something better than that. But let's get into who Bethany was and what her life was like just even months before this.
She was born October 15th, 1985, in San Antonio, Texas. She was the oldest of five children. She had three sisters, Erin, Shannon, and Kristen. Her brother was Matthew. They lived just outside of Arlington, Texas, which is a suburb of Dallas. And they were devoutly Christian. Her parents homeschooled all of the children through elementary and high school. Bethany was a quick learner. She was a bookworm. She had read almost every single Charles Dickens novel by the age 13. She was described as being very gifted, and she was poetic and lyrical. I think she even sang in school.
She performed in theater performances. Her first one was Annie.
She will end up meeting her husband, Tyler Deaton, He's from Robstown, Texas, which is down by Corpus Christi. During high school, he was in marching band, participated in the debate team. He graduated from high school, top of his class. He was very bright and motivated. And his family was devoutly Presbyterian. And a friend would describe Tyler as the most zealous Christian I've ever met. So both Tyler and Bethany come from highly religious backgrounds. Their families are very devout. So they're going to go to, you know, same schools and whatnot and have a lot of background. So they're kind of destined to meet.
They met actually at Southwestern University, which was a private liberal arts college in Georgetown, Texas.
And that was in 2005. In 2007, Tyler had just gotten back from a trip to Pakistan. He had announced that God was going to launch a spiritual revolution on our campus at this school. And he started informal prayer groups and shared his interest in fantasy novels. This guy was seriously into Harry Potter. That was his life, and he intertwined his belief systems with some of the Potter saga of, you know, good versus evil and using magic to fight these evil forces. It was very much part of his psyche. And I can't emphasize that enough.
It started off just a group of five, and more people would join the group over time, but they would pray together all the time and go to movies together quite often.
Yeah.
And Tyler was the leader of this group. And it's probably because he's described himself as being very charismatic. And apparently that's what everyone else thinks too.
He felt like he had mysterious powers to control others in ways that he could not explain. But I think that he just had that charismatic personality, and other people wanted to please him, wanted to be around him. Although he, with his obsession with Harry Potter and magic, felt that this was some sort of inner power within him.
One of Bethany's close friends was Taryn O'Brien. She would later say that Bethany told her that she had met this really amazing, brilliant man who loved God and loved others and wanted to be involved, you know, in missions and prayer and all of the things she was so passionate about. And she went on to say that she was very much over the moon for him. Bethany has expressed her desire to be with Tyler, but many of her friends know there's something else going on with Tyler Deaton.
Yeah, this is kind of out of left field, especially for somebody that's highly religious, comes from a religious background. Tyler's gay. He likes men. This puts a little bit of a wrench in the gears for Bethany to start a relationship with him.
But of course, Tyler really likes Bethany. She's an important part of their group. And he says that he wants to repress and change his sexuality.
There's a local church here in Kansas City. It goes by IHOP, but it's not the International House of Pancakes, and you don't get all you can eat pancakes there. It's actually the International House of Prayer. And this did cause some confusion between IHOP, the pancake place, and IHOP, the church. I think there was actually a lawsuit and they settled before it went to trial. But he goes to a four-day national convention at this church and said that God revealed that his calling was to be an apostle and train God's final people. This is some heavy stuff.
So what do we know about IHOP, though?
They're part of the New Apostolic Reformation, or NAR for short. This is in the United States, Australia, and South Korea. In the U.S., they have about 3 million people attending the NAR churches. They teach that before Jesus returns, the whole church will be led by apostles who have the power to forgive sins, give blessings and curses, and bind higher-ranking demons, control the weather, cause earthquakes, and bring death and destruction to non-believers. So this is some take-it-literally kind of branches of this group. The International House of Prayer, they do evangelical missions, and they're committed to the release of fullness of God's power and purpose. They have 24/7 prayer rooms, so you can go there nonstop and pray. They have 2,000 members on their staff, and they raise their own support. So you, as a member of their congregation, are required to work up to 50 hours a week. You have to help them with whatever their current mission is. You have to make signs, billboards. You have to clean the churches up. Whatever it is, you have to be there and you have to be part of it.
2009, Bethany N. Tyler and others in their group graduated from Southwestern University. Bethany graduated magna cum laude. She had a Bachelor's of Arts in English and a minor in Spanish. Tyler's degree was in political science. It's after this graduation that the two of them moved to Grandview, Missouri. This is when they really get into IHOP. And at that time, their group numbered 20. There were two houses, and each house had a specific gender. But they ate meals together, and anyone who found work would take the money they earned and put it into their community pool. And that's what they called themselves, the community.
Now, they were interns for 6 months. And interns, they, you know, kind of the bottom of the barrel. You got to earn your keep. But the whole focus is living their lives, worshiping Jesus, studying the Word of God, engaging in works of justice, and ministering in the power of the Holy Spirit. This is how you get enrolled into the IHOP University.
So you had already said that Tyler was gay. I had talked about how he was hoping to repress and change that about himself. And working with IHOP, he now thought that he was healed of his homosexuality. So he and Bethany have this romantic relationship. But what does that consist of?
You're kind of starting a relationship based off of something flawed here. So it's not going to go well.
According to the information we have, they would have 1 3-hour date a week, and they made bread together weekly. I don't know how that's romantic, but it was working for them, apparently.
I mean, obviously, they have a complete lack of intimacy, and this is going to impact at least Bethany, because she has needs. She wants a husband, but as Tyler's not exactly into women, this isn't going to work out very well.
But Bethany has her mind made up, and she enrolls in an accelerated nursing degree program. She wants to bring in more money for the community. And by February of 2012, this is just months later, Bethany and Tyler became engaged.
They are part of this community, but again, they're this smaller group within that community. They're kind of their own, I don't want to call it faction, but they have an inner circle that's sort of separate from the rest of the church or organization, as they like to call it. And this is really tight knit. And this just gets more and more, I don't know, isolated from the rest as Bethany and Tyler, I guess, start having more issues.
In August of 2012, Bethany graduated with a Bachelor of Science in Nursing. And that same month, she and Tyler were married. Now, there were some strange comments by Bethany's family, though, who were there. What were they saying about this wedding?
Bethany's mom, their friends and family, they all felt very left out.
They did not feel like they were part of the wedding, and yet Carol was trying to see the upside here. You know, she had raised her daughter to be very religious, and the man that her daughter was marrying, while she had reservations about him, she could tell he was devoutly religious. And then she's also thinking about how her daughter had never made a bad decision ever in her life. So she's really trying to see the upside here and say, I need to trust my daughter.
Yeah. But they're not part of the wedding, really. They're not part of the decision-making process. So it's happening with or without them. It's said that Tyler and Bethany never consummated their marriage.
But this is really strange, Justin, because when they get back from their honeymoon, which was in Costa Rica, Bethany is no longer living in the women's house. She moves in with Tyler and the other men in the men's house.
So you would think that they're spending all this time together, they would have gotten over this hump, but they didn't.
So it's not really a surprise when it's found out that Tyler, well, he's not being intimate with his wife because he's being intimate with other men.
These are other church members that he lives in the men's house with, and it's multiple men, not just one.
We don't really know if this is something that was completely just mutual between them, because it's also said that Tyler, because he's so charismatic and because he's the leader of the community, he's able to tell people how to dress and when they can be intimate with other people and how. So he may be using his position here. We don't really know.
Yeah. I mean, I'm reluctant to use the term cult leader because this is like a small group within a bigger organization. But within that small group, he wields all the influence and power.
I think you're correct. And I think this is why some people don't use the word cult when they talk about this case. But for most people, I think the word works.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree. And I guess this is where things between Tyler and Bethany are going down a steep hill fast. Bethany is depressed. She's totally conflicted on this. She wants a husband, but her husband's sleeping with other men. She wants to share the glory of God with him, but she doesn't exactly feel like this is how you glorify God in prayer and religion. This isn't working. And so she will end up threatening suicide in 2012. She will be admitted to the Truman Medical Center. Tyler thought her depression was all an act and was not supportive of her, even when she's in a hospital. He thought that she was doing this all on purpose, maybe to get attention or maybe to just hurt him in response. But he's not taking this seriously. And I'm looking at this, Aaron, and thinking, she's in a really confusing marriage in a very strict environment. I would definitely take her seriously.
Well, the other thing, I don't think you mentioned it, was she had hoped to start building a family, having children with Tyler. And that clearly isn't happening. So her whole view of what a marriage is, well, that's not coming to be, even though she tied the knot with this guy. And, you know, he says he wasn't taking it seriously, but on October 29th of 2012, he holds an intense prayer session. And this is where he basically, I don't know if you want to call it reads them the riot act or what, but he lets them know they have to make a choice. You have to choose between the community or your own personal selfishness. Those that saw her said that Bethany was curled up in a sitting position and had a mortified expression on her face. I have no doubt that Tyler was addressing her and any others who were sensing any issues with the way things were.
Absolutely.
That's a leader, right? He's letting everyone know, I'm the boss. This is how things will be. If you don't like it, you can get out.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles, and immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
This all comes to a head on October 30th, 2012. Bethany left to go to work. Bethany had stopped by a woman's house. She dropped off a couple of belongings for people that live there, just helping out others. When they were questioned about her visit, they said that she was very quiet and withdrawn. They asked where she was going, and she responded with, "I don't know." A debit card and surveillance footage shows Bethany stopped by a nearby Walmart and a convenience store, and it was approximately 12 hours later when she would be found. She was a cardiac nurse at Menorah Medical Center. That's in Overland Park, Kansas, where I worked most of my life. But it's at around 9:40 p.m. that the Jackson County Sheriff's Office responds to a car that's parked by Longview Lake with a woman inside.
And that's essentially where we started this at. But it gives you a good idea of, you know, when the officers show up and see this scene inside the van, they think, this kind of looks like a suicide. But when you get the backstory on what was going on with Bethany and her new husband, now you can understand why her parents weren't so keen on this just being a suicide, because they know their daughter. Carol and Eric, they know their daughter, and they don't see her as someone who would do this.
Because there was some pill bottles found and a bag over her head, there's some question about, you know, usually with a bag over your head, the plastic bag will be inhaled into the mouth. Well, it was kind of loose around her head. If you fall unconscious before you die, your eyes will close when you die. Well, it says that her eyes were open. Now, these are just questions that a family who's in distress, they're gonna wonder here. They're gonna think, well, are you really looking that close into this? And honestly, Aaron, police officers, they're just going to look at something on the face of it. And if they rule it a suicide, or if they think it's a suicide, you're lucky if they collect any evidence. They might do a rudimentary check, a search around the vehicle, inside the vehicle, take some pictures, and we're done. That's it. Now it's November 6th, 2012, that Bethany's parents and other friends will hold a service at a funeral home that actually overlooked Longview Lake. It's a beautiful scene. While at the service, Tyler and other members of his group, because remember, it's like Tyler and his little circle, they made some statements that alarmed officials from IHOP and the organization. The day after Bethany's service, they told Tyler he was not welcome back at the church or the university. So if the actual IHOP organization is saying, you guys, you need to leave now because somebody's dead and you don't seem to care.
Well, I found this interesting. You have Tyler Deaton, who, you know, his wife is mysteriously dead. We don't know if it was a suicide, if she was murdered. And then very quickly there, pretty much everyone else except for one other person in his community group leaves. This all falls apart very quickly. And it's then that he has this quote that says, everybody left me in a day. If I'm a cult leader, I'm a really bad cult leader. I just find that important because he's trying to lay out, look, I don't have as much power and influence as you think I do. And any stories that try to support that theory doesn't work because if I was that powerful, these people would have stuck with me. I mean, think about other cult cases. Yeah, people will stick with their cult leader all the way to the end. But November 9th, 2012. I mean, for all we know, the police may suspect suicide. They may suspect otherwise. But Micah Moore, one of the members of community, walked into the Grandview Police Department and wanted to speak to the investigators.
And this is where the plot thickens.
He says that he's the one who murdered Bethany in her van at Longview Lake. And of course, the investigators are very interested. So Micah starts telling them about the community. And he starts off by telling them, Tyler was telling everyone, oh, I'm cured. I'm not gay anymore. But he was continuing to have relationships with other male members of the group. And he said that Tyler described these acts as religious experience.
He also told the investigators that over the past few months, they had been dosing Bethany with Seroquel. It's an antipsychotic. It's almost like a horse tranquilizer. It's pretty powerful stuff. And he and several other men in the house sexually assaulted her after they drugged her. And this was all under Tyler's guidance. So this is drugging her and gang raping her. And Tyler said that he was grooming them for long-term sexual partnership. So if there's any part of the story that is true and they were giving her multiple pills, I mean, this is very believable and pretty disgusting.
Micah's also asked, what motive would you have to kill Bethany? And this is where he brings up Tyler again. He said because of what was going on with the Seroquel and the assaults, Tyler was getting nervous that maybe Bethany, who was seeing a therapist, might start telling her therapist about what had been going on. And so he wanted her dealt with so she couldn't tell anyone.
Moore was part of this inner circle. Moore was under the influence of Tyler. Moore talks about how he dropped acid or took psychedelics, had hallucinations of angels and demons fighting over his soul, and he questioned the nature of reality. And this is all leading up to this situation. So I don't know if he was taking psychedelics because Tyler told him to, or if this is all before he met Tyler, but let's just say that he was a little predisposed to believing in this following.
He says that this murder occurred before 10 a.m. I mean, at some point he was in class. So it happened before he got to class. He said he gave her this bottle laced with Seroquel, and then he put a plastic bag over her head and held it until her body shook and she died. So what choice do investigators have, Justin? He's just told them, I'm the one who killed Bethany Deaton.
The information that he's given definitely is on par with what they found. I mean, they found an empty pill bottle. Who's to say that it actually had over-the-counter pills in it or if it had Seroquel in it? He knew about the plastic bag. He's giving details here that are going to flip that suicide angle on its head. And of course, they're going to arrest and charge him, right?
He was held on a $250,000 cash bond. So on the day of the funeral, Bethany Deaton's funeral, her mother received a phone call from the investigators. And they said, "You can't bury your daughter today. We need her body back because we just got a confession. Someone confessed to murdering your daughter."
Yeah.
I can't imagine a worse time. I know that her parents suspected foul play. So on that front, that's not something that's going against what they were expecting necessarily, but it's the timing. They were trying to bury her, and then they get that call.
I don't know if they had passed that point of no return or what, but they got an autopsy done, and the medical examiner said that Bethany appeared to have died from asphyxiation and not from any kind of drug overdose. But this all happened in such a short period that it's not really clear if a toxicology report or a toxicology test was done on Bethany. And since the initial observation by police officers was suicide, the medical examiner doesn't have this confession. He doesn't have this other input. So he's going off of the police said it was suicide. There's a bag over her head, and there's asphyxiation is the cause of death. So he hasn't gotten all the information. So he has no reason to determine this, the manner of death, a homicide.
And that's exactly right. I can see why this autopsy really didn't reveal enough. So the police, they actually did investigate this scene a bit. They checked for fingerprints in that van, and they didn't find any fingerprints that matched Micah Moore's. So then they start wondering, was there someone else with him? So they start talking to other people in the group, and they all keep saying the same thing, that Tyler was having relationships with the other men in the group. But I don't really want to turn this into Z straight. That's not really a question here. This was a question of what happened to Bethany Deaton, and if it was foul play, why?
We have the reason, which is Micah Moore is saying that they were drugging her and gang raping her.
But according to Tyler, that wasn't true.
Yeah.
He's denying it.
And how credible is Moore when the guy says that he's hallucinated angels and demons fighting over his soul? He's kind of gone off the deep end, joined this church, and then found himself in this inner circle under Tyler. And now maybe he's feeling guilty of what happened to Bethany. But I'm sure if you're a member of Bethany's family, you're not thinking that this was suicide, and you're definitely taking Micah Moore at his word.
You have Tyler Deaton denying everything. And then IHOP makes a statement, and they talk about how Tyler and his group were not officially associated with IHOP. They just attended IHOP services and classes. So definitely putting the distance between them and Tyler.
They said Tyler and about 20 other members, which is a small percentage of this organization. And they said that they relocated to Kansas City over the last few years and operated under a veil of secrecy. And they led their religious groups entirely independent of IHOP, which I get it. They're going to have to distance themselves from this because this isn't what they're about. Tyler's actions are completely out of line of what this organization was doing.
But it's really a PR thing, isn't it? Because we also know that there's a nonprofit group that came out pretty hard against IHOP. They're known as Truth Wins Out. And this was their quote: "IHOP's downplaying of their link to Tyler Deaton is implausible." They went on to say that IHOP was an end times cult where the leaders fancy themselves prophets. So they go on to talk about how Tyler was actually listed on their website for a while. Mm-hmm. And so this was really just Tyler got in some trouble here. This is looking really shady. We better distance ourselves from this guy, which I don't blame them. I mean, you know, you can have similar thoughts and beliefs, but if someone may have committed a crime, not saying he did, but if it looks like he might have, well, then there's the choice you have to make. Do we keep backing this guy, or do we go, well, he's not really with us?
When you have a woman's death on your hands, oh, they have to release something publicly to address this.
Now, there was one other member of this group who was having difficulties in the community, Bose Harrington. And he was really being ostracized. At some point, he was asked by someone, why don't you leave? And he said, well, I believe in our mission, and these are my friends. I've been with them for quite a while now. But he was really being treated differently. He was escorted wherever he went. He was made to eat off, well, essentially off the floor and things like that. He was not really a part of their group. He was in it, but he was treated like an outsider or someone who was not on their level. I can't really understand it other than I know he had expressed some concerns to Tyler, and Bethany is the one who brought him into the group.
He believed the movement's leadership had encouraged the perception that we're not real born-again Christians. He found Tyler was delusional, like had grandiose delusions, and he didn't agree with Tyler's evil homosexual agenda. And he would ultimately leave IHOP and join another church to form a new circle of friends. Many of, you know, defected from IHOP, you know, followed him to this other church because he didn't want anything to do with Tyler.
So there's a real question here, Justin. There's a confession. They perform this autopsy. They're looking over the evidence they had collected. They're trying to figure out, is Micah's story truly able to be matched up with the evidence? Because it's one thing to go, it seems to match. And another to say, okay, we're going to get our times down. We're going to get down the sequence of events. And what do they find?
Well, Micah is less than credible. They don't find Seroquel in the car. They don't find fingerprints or any sort of evidence that anyone else was in that vehicle with her that day.
And they don't find any fingerprints on the plastic bag except for hers. And they find no evidence of Seroquel being in her system. They can't find that she was drugged at all.
But prosecutors and the DA, they're listening to Bethany's family, and they're thinking, we might have enough to go after Micah. We might have enough to get something out of this terrible situation. And so it's December 15th, 2012, where he is indicted by a grand jury for a single charge of first-degree murder. Now that is a serious charge. Before he's indicted, Micah Moore has recanted his statement about murdering Bethany. He has recanted his statements about the sexual assaults. He's denying everything. He's saying that he's made it all up. Even the detectives were thinking, you know, this confession, he got some details right, but these details were available to the public. And he was intimately involved with her in this group. So he could have figured these things out on his own.
But there are also problems here. And this is why I'm surprised they charged him. And when they look over everything, they see that she went and bought these pills by herself, the acetaminophen. They don't find these videos he said were on his iPad proving the assaults took place. They don't find those. I mean, as they go through the list, there are so many problems with his story, and yet they can't help but go forward and say, he confessed, so we'll charge him. I mean, I say that because they charge him, but what do they get out of this? They get a court date, but October 31st, 2014, just 2 weeks before that trial is set to begin, prosecutors drop the charges against Micah because they don't have corroborating evidence to match his confession.
If you're part of, again, hate to use the word cult, but if you're part of this group and you're all under the influence and just believing everything that's happening here, and then somebody dies, Well, all of a sudden this gets very real and you might feel guilty about it. I don't know if they had sexually assaulted her. I don't know if any of that stuff had happened, but if Bethany did take her own life, I absolutely think that this group pushed her to it. I absolutely think Tyler had a hand in it. But whether or not you can prove it was foul play or homicide, well, obviously the DA and the investigators, they're saying, no, you can't. And that's why they dismissed all the charges.
Yeah, I really wonder about the investigators because they brought this case and handed it to the prosecutor. So their intention was to have Micah Moore prosecuted. You know, you might say it was in the interest of the family. I think they were looking out for Bethany's family here. That's it. Because I think if you just look at the evidence, it's not supported. You can't see that Micah did this by looking at the evidence. And the prosecutor said something really interesting. The prosecutor said, "My office concluded that we could not ethically continue to pursue the case given the current evidence against Micah Moore. The duty of the prosecutor is to seek justice, not merely to convict." And that's surprising to me because we see a lot of times that prosecutors do want that conviction.
Yeah.
I've heard so many times in just speaking with officers that that's not the case, that police are hesitant to hand a case to a prosecutor unless they're pretty darn sure it'll go somewhere because you could just be wasting their time and your time.
I feel like the investigators did their due diligence in investigating this. They did get warrants. They did confiscate phones and iPads. They vetted every single thing that Micah said, and it didn't pan out. That says something, that they did look into his statements. They did try to find evidence, and this is where they ended up. Micah, of course, has released statements saying that he regrets all the things he said and all the suffering he caused. He wishes he could take it all back.
Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but time for what? If time was unlimited, what would you use it for? If you need to squeeze a special thing into your schedule, do you even know what's important to you and how to make that a priority? Well, with therapy, you can find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We all need to vent sometimes. We all need to talk about some of the things that have happened to us. And I'll tell you right now, your friends might be sick of hearing about it. So take the burden off them. Let a professional help you. Sometimes it's as simple as just getting something off your back and letting somebody else know so you can feel validated and move on with your life. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/GenY today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GenY.
How do you view this story, Justin? What is the story to you when you've, you know, researched it, thought about it over these weeks?
Well, initially, when I read about this case, I'd read the Rolling Stone article about it, and I felt like most of it was true. I still felt that Bethany had probably taken her own life, but she'd been driven to it because she had been repeatedly raped and drugged and was in this terrible situation with Tyler. Now, I'm not sure about anything. Except for Bethany was in distress, was depressed, all caused by Tyler and this group. But I'm not sure about all the allegations that were made. Because once one allegation's made and this church is evil and there's a cult member and the cult leader, it just spreads like wildfire. And even the Rolling Stone has published a kind of a correction to their article. But at the same time, this definitely shows how easily persuaded people are, the influence that somebody can have over others, how people can misinterpret different beliefs and cause real harm to others. And I feel like Bethany was the only one with a good head on her shoulders. She was the one that was going to nursing school, became successful, and was doing good for others. I mean, even the morning of her death, she was dropping off stuff for other people. She's the only person in this entire story that I like.
Yeah, I think I have a slightly different view of the case. One of the things that was pointed out was, why would she write such a note? Because she was more articulate than the note reflected. And she was also apparently busy writing thank you notes to people who had gifted presents to her and Tyler for their wedding. So they question, like, why would she take her own life if she had these things going on? And the way I look at it is, I see this as Bethany Deaton was someone who had these visions of what her life would be with Tyler and with God and this community. And the further she got into it, and it didn't take long because we're talking about months here, she realized how nothing was the way she wanted it or envisioned it to be. And so this was a terrible situation that she found herself in, and I think she couldn't deal with it. And I don't think Tyler helped. I think his selfishness, as he puts it, that was his own. He was carrying on with his friends. Meanwhile, Bethany was suffering. And it wasn't really his problem because he didn't love her that way. And I feel like this isn't common. I know that some people would argue with that, but I think most people have a heart. And in this case, if Tyler has a heart about her now, it's now. It wasn't then. Because when I think back to his quote, Justin, where he's talking about choosing, people need to choose between the community and their selfishness. To me, he's talking to Bethany. And he's basically saying, forget your dreams. You need to be a part of this group. Get with the program. That's heartless. If you want to say that's what pushed her in that direction, I understand. And I just think Bethany was just too close to everything. She didn't have an objective view so that she could just say, you know what, I'm out of here. I think she lost that perspective. But she knew deep down what she wanted, and she knew she wasn't going to get it.
No, I agree with you. He was basking in his influence, in his little group, in his power. And she just became another member, no longer his wife. And he doesn't seem to care about anyone except for himself.
Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app to listen ad-free. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
This episode is brought to you by the effortlessly scrumptious bite of Skinny Pop popcorn. Imagine this: perfectly popped, endlessly delicious kernels, a symphony of just three simple ingredients: popcorn, sunflower oil, and a sprinkle of salt. No compromise, just pure snacking freedom. And hey, if you're up for a twist, dive into flavors like zesty white cheddar to sweet and salty kettle. Every bite's a delight, light and oh so tasty. Shop Skinny Pop now.